Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the Broth Lady, or the inventor of the hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size, and self-love, and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hello.
It has been so long since I have podcasted on this computer, I might not remember how.
It has been a while.
Grr-may-gird. It has been so long.
On the bright side, it hasn't been that long since we talked.
That is true, although it feels like a lifetime ago.
Do you miss me? Do you feel like, oh, wait, where's Sarah right there?
I don't know. I'm not talking to you every day. And I had this moment today where I was like, oh, my gosh, is Sarah mad at me?
I have been sleeping pretty much ever since we got home. I cannot believe how tired I am. And I've basically been like right around now, starting to fall asleep wherever I am, dragging my butt to bed, going to bed super early, dragging my butt out of bed in the morning. And I think it's going to take me like at least 3 weeks to catch up from how little sleep we got on that crazy town book tour.
Yeah, well, I was on that book tour twice as long as you, so I'm quite familiar with sleep deprivation.
Yeah. I stand by my choice of only going for a week and stand by my future choice of only ever doing weekend book tour trips.
Yeah. So I think the last time we podcasted,
honestly, we were making awkward eye contact.
I don't even remember the last time we podcasted.
It was in my house. You were trying to avoid eye contact.
I think we kind of nebulously said we were going to aim to do another tour event because Minneapolis had just been canceled. And we threw out the idea that we were going to try to hit some areas just to let everybody know we have officially
hit some areas.
Planned to hit some areas. We have confirmed for January 2nd, which is a Friday, Tennessee. And we have confirmed for Minneapolis on January 3rd.
And we are working on, with fingers and toes crossed, finding a location for January 4th in Toronto. Whoa, did you have an idea about that?
Well, no, I just want to tell people that after the experience that we had, we hesitate to do anything but a bookstore for Toronto. And we're having a difficult time with, evidently, the Toronto bookstores not feeling like they'll be too overwhelmed with holiday traffic to support a book signing. Because for some reason, people in Canada shop at different times than the U.S. I don't know. So,
Wait. Let me just bring you up to speed on some Canadian culture.
Here we go. Here's the Canadian moment for the show.
There's this thing called Boxing Day. And it is the day after Christmas.
Yeah. We have that here.
Okay, but Boxing Day in Canada is like Black Friday here. So it's the biggest shopping day of the year. And then and just like Black Friday here starts at like noon on Thursday and goes all the way till Cyber Monday.
Which is not
like
acceptable, by the way.
It's like Boxing Week sales. So it really goes like all the way till New Year's. And so it's chaos. And like I never leave my house that week because I can't take the crowds of people.
It's not that week. That's December 26th. We're talking about January 4th.
I know. Okay
just whatever.
the point is that we're working on it, but that if we end up having to cancel or go to a city, a different city, we're just going to apologize in advance because we had the unfortunate event of not being able to secure bookstores for both, for all New York, Chicago, and San Diego. And as a result, it affected the people who could or could not attend in a very drastic sort of way. And the feedback was pretty universally, make sure you're in a bookstore in the future. So that is what we're going to try to do. We're trying our very darndest to get into a bookstore, but we would like for everyone to understand that if that is not a possibility, we may have to go to a different city or figure something else out.
Doesn't mean we'll never come to Toronto. It just means that maybe we'll wait until the weather's nice in May. This May is my favorite time in Toronto.
Yeah, I can't commit to doing anything after the first weekend of January. And I think that I've talked about this on the podcast, but it was surprising news for a lot of people, and I get a lot of questions about this in the tour. So I'm going to be extremely forthright and honest here. Our family has done a lot over the past 4 years for other people's families. And I had a request from our children that we spend the next couple of years focusing on ourselves. And it's very much the lifestyle that we preach. And when your 9-year-old, 6-year-old, and 4-year-old come to you with an intervention, articulating in a very mature sort of way that they think that we need to spend more quality time together as a family, then it's something that's really, really super important for us to listen to. And Matt and I committed to the boys that after we were done with the commitments we had already made with Real Life Paleo, that we would focus being a family. And you know, so as much as I would love to go to Toronto in May, and I would love to hit up every city in the United States because I had a blast on the book tour, short of the sleep deprivation and not eating whole meals part, I also have a commitment to make to my family. So Sarah might be able to go to Toronto in May, but that's not something I can commit to. I have approval from the family to travel for the weekend of New Year's, and that is what I can do at this time. So Toronto, please forgive me, but also I hope that people can appreciate that I'm trying to set an example both for my children and for other families to, you know, listen to what the family dynamic needs are. And I appreciate your understanding and support as we endeavor this new part of our lives where we are not as available all the time and working on so many things so that we can focus on being family, which, you know, I really feel weird about having to say, I'm going to focus on spending time with my family. Like, isn't that something you do all the time, Stacey? Well, as a matter of fact, no. I sit on the sofa next to my children as I type away on blog posts. So, yeah. It's kind of awkward.
So, Toronto, I'm still going to try to come.
Thanks for making that really clear.
So, for me, I'm not trying to, I'm trying to find better work-life balance, but that doesn't, for me, I still want to continue to travel and meet people and do these types of events. I just have to figure out how to structure that and the frequency of that to be able to maintain my sanity. So, what I have been doing this fall of sort of going, I think it was a little bit too much going 2 out of every 3 weekends, but I'll probably continue to still try and go like at least 1 weekend a month somewhere to do these types of events or seminars or stuff. So Toronto, you're on my list. Other places in Canada, I know. You'll be there too. Especially Vancouver. I don't mean to diss you, Calgary. I'm just saying, I have family in Vancouver. Wait a minute. I have family in Calgary. Okay, Calgary, you're on the list too. Montreal. Not Winnipeg. No, wait.
I've never been to Canada. I would love to be able to go.
Well, it's a beautiful country and very friendly people. And I think you would enjoy them. They have great senses of humor. And they apologize for things a lot.
I don't know that I need that.
They will laugh at your jokes.
Okay. Well, I do need that. Oh my gosh. Did you see Grayston and Thude's recap post of our book tour?
No. Did she use amazing analogies again?
She did. She used the best line about us that I have ever read anywhere, and we totally need to usurp it and put it in every biography of anything that we ever do together.
Wait, do you have it in front of you? Read it to me.
Oh, I have the post somewhere. Okay, seriously, I do have this quote because it's like one of the favorite things that I've ever read. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
You sure?
Mm-hmm.
You don't sound like you're jazzed enough.
I'm trying to read it and try to find it, but I can't find it because I can't actually read and talk at the same time.
Okay. Well, it's beneath the photo of you staring at me in the awkward way. And she starts it off, she starts it off by saying, whoa, they're like really pretty, which was a Mean Girls reference and totally makes me blush in that uncomfortable sort of way. So thank you. But then, so she like starts off the paragraph with a joke and then she just slides in parens, and they're even funny. They play off each other really well. It's like paleo stand-up for health geeks. That's totally our shtick. Our shtick is totally paleo stand-up for health geeks.
That, yep. That's very succinct. And that describes us very, very well. I actually found like the whole book tour, I kind of felt like that was we had a shtick, and I think we got like better and better at it like every night.
Yeah. And we were throwing things at people in Portland and they were loving it.
Yes. Apparently, note to self, chuck people at audience members and chuck edible things at audience members. But I just kind of thought that as we went, we kind of got that like teasing each other while adding to the conversation thing happening that I don't know how we do that, but it's like cool when it happens, and it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
It's because we're like almost the same person.
Almost. There was a lot of like us saying the exact same thing at the exact same time. That was kind of weird. Like not just at the actual signings, but like the entire trip. I had a really good time spending that much time with you. Turns out, I really like you and you're cool.
Thanks. You're not too shabby.
Yeah.
So I will say that people, another line that I read or heard that I'm not sure, I think it was on social media, so I'm sorry I'm not giving credit where it's due, but somebody said that it's like when your favorite show crosses over with your other favorite show and you get to watch it, that's what it was like seeing us in person, that it was like a book signing with your authors and your bloggers with your podcasters, and it comes together and it's live and it's actually happening in front of you. I think that's pretty much the consistent message that we get from people across the board, is that we really are like we are the podcast. We're just goofy and we get along well and we just break out random cauliflower facts sometimes.
Random cauliflower facts, and just random food facts generally, nutrition facts, and random science geekiness. And and then like random, like heartfelt, like, you know, sob stories, not sob stories, but like stories that make you go like, aw, that's kind of different than a sob story, isn't it? Apparently I have lost my ability to talk. Have I mentioned that I've slept pretty much constantly ever since we got home?
Yeah, you did mention that.
Yeah. And apparently my brain has not decided to start working again yet.
That's cool. We're cool.
Hey, so I'm going to miss traveling without you if you stop doing all this traveling stuff.
I know. I feel like I just got in a groove and I understand what to do now and how to do it. And it's to nobody's benefit. But I'm still going to go to Austin for PaleoFX. And I'm still planning on if they have a PaleoFX in Denver. Those are kind of great opportunities for me because I get to see a lot of different people all at once rather than having to go to like a lot of different places. And I can usually do that in like 3 days. So, it's not like as hard on the family, and Matt actually usually comes with me, for those. So, not quite sure what we're going to do for PaleoFX this year, because the person who watches our children, Paleo Sitter, who actually guest blogged about watching our children this week on the blog, if you're interested in that, is actually going to PaleoFX. So that presents us with a challenge, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah. There's like three options. right? Matt stays home. All of you come. Or you have to find another Sam.
Yeah. Which none of those are really very appealing.
No. No. Nor necessarily practical.
Yeah. But I will go. I already put in the request to go. I don't know if I've been accepted because, unlike you, Mrs. Headliner, I have not received confirmation that my...
I didn't receive confirmation other than, like, I'm on the mailing list and I received the email that went out to the entire mailing list of, like, look who our presenters are. And yeah. I was like, hey, I'm on the list.
I think I knew before you because I checked that email and I was like, hey, look, here's your headshot. Yeah. So, I mean, being the case that I am accepted, then I will definitely be going because I'll be presenting. So... we'll see.
Should find some opportunity to do some PaleoView stand-up.
I don't know what you mean. Like, while we're in Austin, we should do another event?
We're in Austin. We should do something where we're, like, live on the PaleoView.
We should have pitched that. I don't know why we didn't think of it. Everybody's dying to hear us. That was sarcasm, everybody.
So
I kind of want to talk about some of my favorite things on the tour, now that it's over.
That's kind of what I was hoping we'd talk about.
Okay.
Because I know we agreed to do a check-in show, but I kind of thought it would be really cool to maybe share some of our tour FAQs, because we kind of got – there were certain questions that we got over and over and over again. And I think that we could kind of do like a Q&A, but sort of – talk about our FAQ. We can talk about our favorite things for the tour first.
All right.
Have you noticed that I've started pronouncing tour the way you pronounce tour?
I'm glad, because you're not in Canada anymore.
I miss Canada. Toronto, I'm coming! I will come at some point.
I'm coming. Okay, so I guess one of my favorite moments in the tour is also one of the questions that I get most frequently, which is about having been a vegetarian before. So this question often comes in like a myriad of issues. And I know that a lot of people ask a lot of different paleo people this question, but I have previously been a vegetarian, so I often get asked to talk a little bit about that. And one of my favorite moments in the tour was when a woman who was like 10 days paleo from being a vegetarian, who, by the way, bacon was her gateway drug, asked about how to get herself more comfortable with eating a wider variety of meats. And I think this also dovetails into another question that we get, which is like, how do we actually incorporate the weird stuff that we encourage everyone to eat into our lives and our family's lives, right? Because we both encourage the use of liver and seafood and weird things, broth. And people say that they have a difficult time with that. So kind of like dovetailing those two questions into one, ultimately the answer is that I feel extremely passionately about respecting a whole animal, which is why my second book was called Recipes That Respect the Whole Hog. Because for me, if I'm going to take an animal's life, which I spent 7 years telling myself wasn't okay to do from a moral perspective, and I've realized that the morality of that is much more a gray area than I realized in terms of, you know, the lives of other animals affected by vegetarianism and soy fields and yada, yada, yada. So now I've come to this realization that meat is essential to our health, and that if I'm going to make my conscience feel better about that, the best thing that I can do is respect the whole animal. So, you know, our family buys whole chickens as often as we can when we buy chicken, so that there aren't like bits and pieces being wasted. We even use the feet to make broth. Even though I don't like chicken broth, I throw it in with some beef bones or some pork bones or something. And I think too, for me, I'm able to reconcile a lot more of the respect for that animal, because I know that I used every single part of it and none of it was wasted. And, you know, that becomes a lot more important when you're talking about a big animal like a pig or a cow, where, you know, if you don't take the parts that you don't like, then they go to like the farmer's freezer that nobody buys from, and then they have to give it away and they didn't get paid for it, or it becomes somebody's dog treats when it's like the most nutrient-rich part of the animal. I think it was interesting. We've heard several people say that the food chain in the other parts of the animal kingdom, that let's take, for example, lions, when they take down whole animals, the lions eat all the offal and they leave the muscle meat for the hyenas. So I think like that perspective for people is very helpful that, you know, not only is it the most nutrient dense part, but you're also respecting the animal. And if you eat liver, you're getting like 100 times more nutrients than you're eating muscle meat. So you could actually potentially eat less of it. That's what I got.
I remember specifically that particular variation of the question in Phoenix. That was such a great crowd. They had us laughing so hard. But that was like almost every stop there was a variation of that question. And I think we talked about poop a lot.
Every time. There was something that came up about poop.
It came up at some point. Every single place we went, I'm like, I didn't realize that people wanted us to talk about poop so much.
I could tell you, people loved for me to talk about my gallbladder, which I'm sure you witnessed, because every city, people also asked about gallbladders, which, like, I can't talk about it without the context of poop, because that's how I know my digestive function is
working. There was a lot of constipation questions, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Both in terms of, like, people trying to figure out how to deal with it and... you know, wanting to know if paleo would help, right? That kind of line, or transitioned to paleo and having some issues with it, that kind of line, or transitioned to paleo because of it and it didn't get better. Like, you know, all kind of different sides of the same coin, but like, and now how do I make myself go poo? And we talked about that a lot, like in every city. So I don't know why it's such a common, I guess people have poop problems and it's really miserable when you have a poop problem. Like no matter how you're having the problem, it doesn't feel good. So that was one of our like major, like variations of please talk about poop questions.
and the questions were just like that. Please talk about poop.
Hey, you guys are here. And I was wondering if you guys could talk about poop. So there's a lot of TMI shared, really, I think, along the tour. I didn't realize I kind of feel like this is like a license to talk about poop as much as I want, because I didn't realize how much of a deep need there was in the public for more poop talk. You're feeling awkward already?
I mean, like, whatever. I don't really... Poop doesn't bother me. I don't feel compelled to talk about it, but it's like the end of the world.
I'm remembering a certain podcast that we recorded in the past where I made you feel deeply uncomfortable.
Now, I'm sure if you asked me for details, I could have done without it.
And then I got asked in almost every location about allergy testing.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Was, like... I think
the first like time or two, my face scrunched up like, oh, how are you going to cover this? Because I know you personally. And so like,
well, but you know, I've been actually doing a lot of traveling this fall. So I've had a lot of practice answering this question because it's not just a question that came up like every location on this tour, but it comes up every location. And I think in part that comes from like people who are trying to figure out, sometimes they come to paleo from after working with an alternative medicine doctor, and they'll sort of come at it because of, you know, somebody doing some form of allergy and sensitivity testing, whether it's, you know, a type of testing that's well-founded in science or a type of testing that's complete bunk, but, you know, they don't necessarily know. And they kind of hit paleo sort of in that area. And then they kind of go, well, if it didn't show up on my allergy test, do I need to cut it out? Do I need to do autoimmune protocol? Like it creates a lot of confusion because the paleo diet is already like a therapeutic diet. And then the autoimmune protocol is like the super therapeutic version of it. And so if you come at it from, you kind of came to paleo accidentally because your food sensitivity panel kind of showed that you should cut out most of those foods anyways. And so you just decided to give it a try. It sort of clouds the issue of, well, do I add those foods back in? Do I do reintroductions? How do I know what else to cut out? Like, what do I do if I seem to be sensitive to everything? And it, there gets to a point where these questions become so detailed and so specific to that individual that I just can't answer them anymore. And it's just, you know, well, I recommend finding a good health practitioner to work with. You can look at paleophysicians.com, primaldocs.com. It's Paleo Physicians Network, not Paleo Physicians. The Institute for Functional Medicine, or you can look at the Paleo Mom Consulting and look at one of my handpicked consultants and find a professional within those networks to work with to help you, you know, troubleshoot. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not always the answer that people want. Like, they want like a fix me, diagnose me on the spot. Sarah, I've known you for 3 minutes. And it's hard for me because I would love to be able to do that. I can't legally, but I also just can't. I mean, often these questions are so complex. But when it comes to like the basic, what do I think of, you know, these big food intolerance panels? You know, what do I think of them? Well, they're limited in the sense that there's a lot of ways that you can be sensitive to a food that we can't measure with any test. So you can do that test and it'll say that a food is fine, and it's not fine because you're reacting to it in a way that's not producing antibodies. And there's dozens of different ways that you can react to a food that's causing you problems that's not going to create an antibody that we can measure on one of those tests. And then there's the problem of false positives. When you have a severely leaky gut, your body just starts making antibodies against everything. And that doesn't always mean that you need to cut those foods out of your diet. So you have both sides of that problem where you might not cut out foods that you should. You might cut out foods that you don't necessarily have to. And so in the end, you end up doing an elimination diet anyway. But where they do come in handy is when you're doing the elimination diet and there's still a problem food a few problem foods and you can't figure out what they are. And then it can help you kind of focus where you're going to go on your elimination diet. And then the other place where they're really useful is, you know, there are some people, because food is addictive and it does take commitment to follow a paleo diet and takes even more commitment to follow the autoimmune protocol. There are people who need to see that test result to have the motivation to make the changes to their diet. And so for those people, it's a tool. It's unfortunate when they're sensitive to a food and it doesn't show up on the test, because then they don't have this positive test result to have the motivation. But, you know, I understand that for some people, that's an entry point to making some changes, is to see that test result. And in that case, you know, I definitely see a utility in it. But it's, you know, generally, it's a very dynamic system. You know, when people say, well, it changed, well, it's because the immune system changes and you need stimulation to form antibodies. So you need to be eating that food in order to have the antibodies to it. And then as the immune system, you know, if you're doing a therapeutic diet and the immune system regulates better, food intolerances can go away. If you overdo a food and your immune system still isn't super regulated, new ones can form. So it's a very dynamic system. And so I generally recommend, you know, an autoimmune protocol type elimination diet, you know, working with a really qualified healthcare practitioner who can help tweak beyond that. Do you need to do low FODMAPs? Do you have, you know, a shellfish allergy? Like, there's other things that aren't sort of automatically cut out of the autoimmune protocol that are problems for some people. And then really focus on the other things that regulate the immune system that help you heal, like sleep and stress management and, you know, being outside and being active and kind of, you know, have, you know, everything I wrote about in the Paleo Approach, you know, all that stuff, 432 pages of science.
Well, I will tell you that it was one of the most frustrating things for me. And for those of you who are listening, who are on the tour, that this happened, don't so much take it personally as try to learn from it. But one of the frustrating things for me was when someone would ask you a question about a specific health condition and would say something like, I'm doing everything I possibly can, and then go on to describe the most type A, stressed out, hypertension type scenario in which they are obsessive compulsive, seemingly, about the nuances of the autoimmune protocol. And you or I, usually I, in the snarky sort of stand-up comedy fashion, would kind of just shrug and say, well, it sounds like you need to work on stress management. Because, like, at what point can we help you, right? If you're saying that you know the paleo approach and you're saying you're doing everything and you're not getting the results that you want, then there are a lot of lifestyle factors to focus on. So if you're telling us that you're adding all the nutrient-dense superfoods and, you know, you're not seeing changes, then one of the most important things is sleep, stress management, and sunlight. I don't know how often Sarah and I say those words. And it's interesting because those people do not want to hear that. And I am one of those people, right? Like, I want to be like, no, like adamant, hand talking, you tell me what to do and I'll do it and then I'll get better. And it's like, actually, the thing that you need to do is spend more time with your family. So, you know, I hope that for those people that we sent that message, and for those of you listening who have that question, because it's very common, we got it a lot.
We got some variation of that in every location.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first two questions are like, how's your sleep? And there's always excuses, right? How's your stress? There's always excuses. Oh, well, I have two young kids. Oh, you know, well, I work 60 hours a week at my job. There's always some reason. But if you're sick, you're putting all this effort into your diet and you're not going to see the results from that effort unless you handle the lifestyle piece. And that's why there's two whole chapters in the Paleo Approach about lifestyle. There's two chapters about diet and there's two chapters about lifestyle. Like, it's equally as important, and it's an equally important signal to the immune system. So when diet's not working, that's the missing piece. And whether it's sleep or stress management or both or activity or being outside, and they're usually all intertwined, right? Because not getting enough sleep is a stress, and then it decreases your ability to handle other psychological stressors in your life. And then if you're not getting enough sleep and you're really stressed at your job, chances are you're not making time to spend time outside. Like, it's usually some kind of combination of all of those things. But yeah, we did get some variation of that question everywhere. Like, every city. Usually with a long list of additional food sensitivities.
Yeah. The other thing that I would add that we got in every city was the really sad question, because it was usually directed towards me, about my spousal sabotage or family sabotage.
You got that question, I think in every city or almost
and
every
city. And it breaks my heart, because I can give people recommendations on how to get people in their lives engaged, right? And I can talk about what worked for our family. But ultimately, what it kind of boils down to is, like, and this is, like, as painful as it is for me to say, as it is for someone to hear, that this is really about being in a good partnership. And whether that's with your parents, or whether that's with your spouse, or whether that's, you know, with your sister who takes your kids all the time, like, and I've talked about it before on the podcast, you've got to trust the people in your lives taking care of you and your children. And if you can't trust them, and if they don't respect you, that's a relationship issue I can't address. And, you know, to me, it boils into so much more things than just food. You know, I think the analogy that I gave before on the podcast, and I apologize for those of you who have listened from the beginning, not only because that's painful, but because you're hearing this twice now, is like, if my father wanted to take the kids to see Schindler's List, right? And, like, my dad's like, listen, this is a war history and it's an important lesson and I think it's really important that they see it. And I say to him, I don't think the children are ready to see Schindler's List. That's a really intense movie. Regardless of the quality of the film and the educational value it might have, the answer is no. Please do not show my kids Schindler's List. And then if my dad took my kids to see Schindler's List anyway, like, that is a relationship problem that has nothing to do with Schindler's List or the food he might feed them that I told him no to, et cetera, et cetera. That's about a trusted relationship with the people in your life. And, you know, if you have a spouse who, when you're not in the house, goes out to the store and buys white bread and peanut butter and feeds it to your children, or the minute you say, can you take the kids out to dinner tonight because I have to work late, and they take them to get the, you know, Italian spaghetti dinner. If these are the choices that the people in your life are making, then it's not a problem I can solve, because it's much more about a partnership and relationship. And for me, I don't tolerate that sort of thing. I don't know how to answer it other than to say, like, for me, I would sit down with the person in my life and I would say, like, this is really a problem. You disrespected me. It's a bad example for the children. It's not okay for me to tell them one thing and you to tell them something else. It's not clear and helpful for them. Like, you're either with me or you're not with me. And I really hope that you want to get on board with this, but this is the choice that we're making. And I think it, you know, in a relationship, in a spousal relationship, I would liken it to, you know, political differences or religious differences. It's going to be really heated and intense, but ultimately you've got to come up with a solution that everybody agrees on, because it's not fair to put the kids in the middle.
I'm just envisioning families now with kids in the middle with religious and political differences.
I know a number of people who, like, raise their kids, you know, multi-religions and blah, 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 blah. And it's not easy. Like, the parents have to make a decision. Like, we're going to celebrate both Hanukkah and Christmas. You know, like, they have to have that discussion and make the decision, because otherwise you put the kids in the middle.
And it's a joint decision and a joint compromise. And yeah, I think it's a really good analogy, because that's one of the other questions I get is, like, you know, how do I get my spouse to do this? And I'm like, you know, one of the analogies that you probably heard me answer, like, in every other single location is, like, food is an addiction. We are living in a society where food is fast, easy, cheap, engineered to be highly palatable and also terrible for us. But it's all of those other wonderful things first. And it's addictive. And it's very much akin to a smoker. Nobody smokes thinking it's going to give them amazing skin and make them live to be 150 years old. Like, people who smoke know that it's going to be horrible for them, that it's going to give them lung cancer, that they're going to get emphysema, that, right? There's all of these things that they know is going to happen, and they do it anyways because it's addictive and it gives them, you know, comfort or pleasure or whatever it is. And food is the same. And with food, you can't go cold turkey because you still actually need it to survive. So it actually becomes a much more complicated addiction to address in that sense. And so when somebody, you know, no matter what kind of health issues are sort of pointing to that person would benefit from the health, from, you know, a healthy paleo diet, right? You can't force that on anybody. Well, maybe your 2-year-old, but you can't force that on anybody with, you know, above about 4 years old, because the decision has to come from that person, that they want to make those choices. And when it's your kid, you can have the discussions and education. When it's adult, you kind of just have to let them make their own choice. And you can have the discussion in a marriage about how you're going to raise the kids and what are, you know, whether or not it's going to be okay to go out and buy bread and peanut butter and feed that to the kids. Like, that's then the relationship discussion. But when it comes to getting your spouse on board and how to do that, I mean, you can educate, whether that's a book or a podcast or, one of these online summits or, you know, whatever resource you think is going to be most helpful. But if that person's not willing to read that book that you give them, if they read the book and they still don't want to do it, you just have to wait until they're ready. And then when they are ready, be the support that they need to, you know, basically quit eating sad food, right? Like, quit eating highly palatable food devoid of nutrition. So that's a hard one, right? Because you're watching somebody make choices that you think aren't the best choices for them.
No, I totally agree. And I think that, you know, depending on the question and what the issue is, I think that was consistently our answers in terms of how to get people either on or how to get over it. You know, I think for a lot of people, it's like, well, my dad or my mom or my sister or my cousin is dying. Like, I see them dying and I know that I can help them. What do I do? And like, I don't know how many times we had to say, like, if the person's not ready, the person's not ready. You know, I was informed about Weight Watchers being a not good choice for me 10 years before I found paleo. I wasn't ready to hear it. Like, I was convinced that I was doing the right thing because that's what society told me. As like, if I just, you know, lessened my caloric intake enough then I could be healthy. And I think one of the messages that you and I consistently told in our before story is that being thin is different than being healthy, and that getting thin the wrong way can actually put you in a worse state of health. And I think that's something we both struggled with when you came off of low carb and when I came off of low carb paleo intermittent fasting. We both struggled tremendously with our health in terms of autoimmune flare and repercussions as a result of it. And so, you know, for us, a lot of the messaging was, it's okay to focus on your health, but you also have to respect and love yourself, which has been one of my consistent messages for a long time and something that, you know, I've enjoyed fine-tuning with you because I know it's a priority for you as well. And you weren't there in Seattle, but it was funny. One of the women who asked a question was like, you know, you've talked a lot about your weight and you've talked a lot about your health. Like, can you talk about that? I was like, that's a pretty broad, like, where do you want me to start? And basically what she was getting at is she wanted me to talk to the audience and, like, motivate her specifically, but the rest of the audience as well, to really focus on that piece of the puzzle, which is your health. And the ideal here is that when you focus on your health, then your body, weight, health, markers of other kinds will normalize. Whether you're underweight, ideally you will gain weight. And if you're overweight, ideally you will lose weight. But that the priority is really about focusing on health and getting, you know, yourself healed first and foremost.
It's getting healthy to get thin rather than getting thin to get healthy.
Which won't necessarily happen.
Right. And I think that, you know, for both of us, we had parts in our journey where we really had to separate the idea of weight loss and getting thinner with getting healthier. And for me, it was a huge shift and a huge positive shift in my understanding of health was to separate those two words and to realize that the definition of thin was different than the definition of healthy. And while certainly there are plenty of healthy thin people out there, that wasn't necessarily what healthy was going to mean for me, and that my priority needed to be healthy rather than thin. And I know that you've come to a very, you know, similar place in your health journey. And I think that that was a message that there's a message that's not heard enough with paleo. So I think that a lot of people come to paleo and sort of see it as a panacea and see it as the sort of like ultimate weight loss diet. And there's all these great stories out there of people who lose, you know, 100 pounds and then they're, you know, this, you know, super muscular size 4, whatever, in a bikini. And that's fantastic. And I'm happy to celebrate those success stories. You're not seeing the behind the scenes of how healthy that person is. And I don't want to make any kind of sweeping generalization there about the health of those people. But it's, I don't think it's the normal experience. I would say that the normal experience is people have a lot of success losing weight and then their bodies normalize at a weight that's heavier than what the number was that they wanted to get to. And I think it's because it's a fairly general experience for people who are using a paleo diet to lose weight is that their body gets to a really healthy weight and then stops wanting to lose weight. And the weight that we all want to be, the weight that society currently tells us is the most beautiful, is not actually a healthy weight for most of us. And so I think that that's a more common experience, is for people to have a lot of success losing weight initially, and then to hit a point where their bodies are really healthy, and then they have to wrap their heads around the fact that that's 5 or 10 pounds or 30 pounds heavier than what they had set out as a goal. So I think that, you know, that doesn't mean that you can't lose those last 10 pounds. That doesn't mean there isn't things that you can work on. That doesn't mean that you're, you know, stuck at a certain weight forever. But it's a really complex topic, and there's a lot of factors that are going into weight that's not food. And so it's – and it's not exercise either. So I think that just changing the conversation and looking at metrics of health is far more important, because it's actually – it's just far more important to be healthy, period. But it's also something that makes it a lot easier to understand where the missing inputs are. So when you're struggling with weight loss or even struggling with weight gain, you know, when you start evaluating your health,
it's a lot easier to isolate. Oh, well, I'm not getting enough sleep. Oh, well, I'm still really stressed. Oh, well, I'm actually still sitting down for 10 hours a day. And you can sort of isolate those things. It's sort of easier to see when you approach this all from a what's going to make me healthier standpoint than what's going to make me thinner. And I think it's a much healthier mindset, just period, in terms of living our lives. Did I go on a soapbox?
I like it. I see now why you like it when I go on soapboxes.
There was some soapboxes on our tour.
No.
There was multiple soapboxes. I mean, they did put us in front of a room full of people and ask us for our opinions on things. I don't know what anyone was expecting. Presumably they were expecting some soapboxes.
I don't know. I think they might have been expecting, like, boringness or something.
We were not boring.
One of my favorite parts about the tour was that at the end of each night, the bookstore representative, and, you know, in each city, these people didn't know each other. They didn't know us. They would come up to us and they would be like, "Wow, you guys are so engaging. Like, that was really fun. I watched the whole thing." Like, I, you know. And they themselves, not paleo, not whatever, that is their job to do book signings. So they see a ton of authors. Like, it's usually a regional rep that covers several stores. And so they see a lot of signings, and that's their dedicated job. And each one of these individuals would come up to us after and just be like, "I loved it. You guys are so engaging. Your fans are so great. It's so much fun." And they would offer to take pictures of everybody for us. Like, they were just as into it as we were.
Well, and I mean, we got some pretty amazing compliments about how you could tell we really cared, which I mean, we do, how focused we were on connecting with people, which we are. And it kind of makes me wonder, I mean, I have I ever gone to a book signing? I've gone to a couple book signings that weren't mine. I don't know how ours are necessarily that different from the norm. But, you know, we got so many compliments on just, you know, not just that we were like fun to listen to, but just the way that we connect with the people who come. And that was kind of neat to hear from an outside observer, because it's something that I, you know, make a priority, is to really connect with the people who come out and to meet us at these book events, because, you know, I understand how important that moment is for them in their lives. And I want to embrace that and encourage that and live up to that expectation of connection. And it's important to me to be that person who does spend a few focus minutes with each person who comes. And I don't know how sustainable that is over the long run, but for as long as I can do that, I'm going to do that. And I hope I'm never the author who just, you know, writes a little Sarah and smiley face in a book and like hands it over and goes next. Like, I don't want to ever be that person. And so it was really cool to sort of hear from bookstores that see a lot of authors and see a lot of like big shot authors come to their signings and have crowds that are smaller than our crowds and spend less time connecting with them. Like, that was, that sort of sentiment is like, what, really? Wow. Did it make you feel cool? Made me feel kind of cool. Like I'm awesome. Because I think we are.
I keep doing this thing where I don't realize that the microphone's on mute because I'm a little sleep deprived. But I was like, yeah, that totally makes me feel better than everyone else. And that's what's really important. And I was joking. And then when you didn't laugh, I was like, oh, darn it.
It was a funny joke. And it would have been even funnier like 30 seconds earlier.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going for.
Also, you were kind of like leaving me like to make some kind of like joke to that effect. And I'm like, come on, Stacey, say something.
You're like, Stacey, this is what I have you here, paleo stand-up.
Right. We're supposed to play off of each other.
Cool. So can we talk about some of our favorite things?
Mm-hmm.
Have we answered all of our frequently asked questions?
What was your favorite gift?
Okay, I love that we got gifts. I'll just put that out there. I loved food, right? Like, people would bring us, like, Alana from Grace and Enthused brought us my juicy pot roast, which is one of my favorite recipes, and that came like a perfect time, and it was amazing the next morning for breakfast.
The best breakfast. Yeah. Yeah.
And earlier that day, like, we were literally sitting in the lobby of the Chicago CrossFit box where we were, and talking about how sad we were that we hadn't been able to get a meal on the way, because that had been our intention, as was the entire tour. We kept being like, yo, we'll get a meal on the way, and then we were running late and we have to be like, oh, darn, another protein bar.
You were that G-rated the whole time.
Oh, darn. Yeah, people saw a different side of me in person. And then in walks Paleo Cajun Lady and Bacon Mom and another individual whose name I can't remember, but I have a picture with, and I remember her face. And they had all brought us gifts. They had brought you a selfie stick, and they had brought us food and your plantain crackers and like these date bar things that you couldn't eat, but I thought were spectacular. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is just what I wanted at just this very moment. It was like, I happened to also get a handwritten, like, multi-page letter in New York City. And that was, like, tear-jerking. I ended up saving it because I saw how long it was, and I was like, I want to be able to read this when I'm not super exhausted. And I read it on the plane the next day and was, like, crying, and I'm sure the person sitting, because you would sit at window seat and I would sit at aisle seat, and there were random strangers that would sometimes sit in the middle of us.
We would just have conversations like,
and they, you knew they hated us, right? Like, you knew they just could
They're
not stand us.
Why didn't you guys sit beside each other?
Yeah.
They'd be like, cause neither one of us wanted to sit in the middle.
Yeah. We were really hoping you wouldn't sit here. That's why. Anyway, I'm sure that person thought that I was a total loon as I was like, you know, crying as I read this letter. You were asleep, so you didn't see it. But, yeah, I mean, I hate to pick favorites, but especially food and handwritten letters. Those are my favorites.
Selfie pool. How awesome.
Yeah, and there's pictures all over the internet from Bacon Mom's selfie pool.
Emma from the Bacon Mom, M-U-M, gave me a selfie pool, at which point I used at like every single event afterwards because it was awesome.
I don't know, you forgot it a couple of times and I was like, tee-hee-hee.
I think I forgot it in Atlanta. I think that
yes, you did, because
it.
I'm working on the photos from all the cities, and you didn't have one in Atlanta.
Yeah, and that was the weirdness of being home and not having, you know, getting that like overconfident of, oh, I'll just leave everything in my suitcase. I'm home, so I don't need to get all that stuff. But then after that, I kept it in my purse so I wouldn't forget it. And food, awesome. Letters, awesome. Books, awesome. So, Jane, who had come to, she came to New York, but she'd also come to our signing in Philadelphia. And she brought books, like, wrapped for our kids.
I sent them home to my kids, and they're in the package that, like, you sent me that hasn't gotten here yet. Was it, what's in there?
Yeah, the one for my kids was a book. And
I felt like a book. I haven't.
And, like, a really great choice. So, like, pretty awesome. And so that was really cool. And then did you try movement menus like chocolate with the cashew butter?
I may have reached out to her and asked her where the link to that recipe was and already pinned it and asked her to guest post. I may have already done that. The other food thing that I really liked, because most time people make our recipes, which is super awesome because they know we'll like it. But I also liked Every Bite, Something Bite. What was her name in New York City that made the sweet potato pie? Like, it was sweet potato flour with lard, and then I think it was a pumpkin pie. And there's a picture
Gabriella?
Yeah, Gabriella. There's a picture of me like making out with that pie.
You were making out with that
pie. I was so
and
hungry.
When you finished that pie on the airplane the next day, you made out with it again.
Yeah, it was really good. It was the same piece of pie. It wasn't like a whole pie.
That was really good pie. Yes. I it made me feel special. I don't know. And it makes it homey. I think that's what it is. Like when there's this like home cooked food, there's something that somebody put some time in thinking about us and thinking about how hard it is to travel. It just makes us feel welcome. It makes us feel at home. It makes us feel like we want to go back to that city. And I think that was just, I think what was so special about those things. It's like people are thinking about, they're thoughtful. The selfie pole was a really thoughtful gift. And I mean, they all were. And I think that's one of the things that's so cool is that, oh my gosh, you guys listen to us and you actually know what we like.
Yes, totally. And there was chocolate, there was plantain chips, there's like all of my favorite foods. New York gave us the most amount of gifts. So step up your game, every other city. But we came away from New York with like so many bags, we couldn't actually get everything into our suitcase. That's why I had to eat pie.
Oh, we were like chugging.
I was literally
in the airport before going through TSA.
We were on the shuttle to the airport with like 8 airline agents. And I was chugging half frozen broth on the way to the airport. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And frankly, I kind of was. I think you said to me like, oh, they think we're weird. And I'm like, well, we are. but I'm going to drink this broth. So
how did that look like? If there was a place to back up to, they would have been backing up slowly. Like, yeah. But that's okay. We met oddly enough, the hotels we were staying at, because we often stayed near the airports. We stayed a lot of like the crash pad hotels, like where the pilots and the flight attendants are all staying as well. We encountered a lot of flight crews on our trip, not just on the airplanes.
Yeah.
Okay. Next favorite thing.
Hmm.
What was your favorite city?
So I really loved the cities of Chicago and Portland. And I think because I had the most amazing meals there. So let me just hold on those amazing meals for a moment, because I'm going to need to like have a moment explaining this. But for fans like Phoenix, and I hate to pick a city because all of the fans in all of the cities were amazing. Like the girl that I met in Atlanta who went to a mommy group with the Judas and Walking Dead, like that was a total moment for me. But in terms of like overall crowd, the Phoenix group, there were people that were there 4 hours early to make sure they could get a seat. The Phoenix crew had never had a paleo person in their city ever. And they were the most excited, enthusiastic people of the whole tour. Like they got us excited, and it started off with a really, really great stand-up routine because there was a woman who was holding a seat for a woman who wasn't there yet, right in the front row. In Phoenix, we ran out of seats before we even started. Like there were a lot of people in Phoenix.
Well, we were like trying to find chairs from everywhere else in the store to try and increase how many seats we had.
And there were still people standing after we'd pulled all of the chairs in the whole store. Like there were still people standing in the back, which is fine. Some people don't mind standing, but we have a lot of people with health problems. And so we like to not make them stand. Anyway, so it started on this riff about poor Gina, because Gina walks in like 5 minutes late and you and I just like roll with it. We're like, hey, Gina, how's it going? Welcome to the show. You haven't missed much. You know, we're just kind of like,
she was such a good sport.
She
about
was.
It.
Yeah. And so Phoenix is also where we talked to the vegetarian woman who had like just converted and was super, super excited about the health improvements that she'd already seen. And just in general, like, I felt like they had pom-poms attached to their hands. Like, they were just so excited. I mean, Portland was the biggest crowd of everywhere that we went. And they were super awesome and enthusiastic. And we threw EXO bars at them. And by the way, you can get 10% off EXO bars with the code BOOKTOUR. Because it's a product that Sarah and I both support. And they were super awesome in providing that discount code for everyone in the hopes that you might buy sustainably raised protein that's a better amino acid profile than nut bars. But anyway, so Portland, holy moly, like Chef Gregory, who's currently kicking major booty on Top Chef, which I had to like tell you about, and I like wanted to just thump you upside the head that you didn't know this as a foodie. But Chef Gregory is like the head executive chef of Departure in Portland, and so super humble and nice. And I had contacted him via Instagram because he must follow me on Instagram to get my messages, but I certainly follow him, and was like, hey, we're going to be in Portland, but we have a book signing at 7. Is it possible to eat at 4 so that we can be done and leave in time to like get to the signing? And he was like, absolutely, I'll make it happen. And we walked in and he's standing by our table, the best table in the restaurant, amazing, amazing views. And basically was just like, what kind of food do you guys like? I'm just going to send out a bunch of stuff and you enjoy it. And it was like the best dining experience. And he came out at the end and was talking with us. We hugged, we took selfies, and I'm not one to get like celebrity-ish about anything, you know? And I wouldn't say that I was schoolgirl giddy with him, but we hugged and it was totally like, is this for real? Like, am I? Is this happening for me? Because this is kind of amazing. So that was awesome.
I believe, as I said, on our way to the book signing after that meal, like that of the moment of what's the moment of the tour where I felt like the most celebrity-ish myself, yeah. Because it was like having a celebrity chef make a big deal out of you. Like that's amazing. And to be fair, I don't have cable, nor do I watch television.
Yeah. So there are ways around that, but we won't talk about it. Anyway,
I also spend my time either working or focusing on my family and do not watch TV.
Yeah. Well, I watch that TV with my family. It is a bonding experience for us. Anyway, so we also ate at the Cultured Caveman restaurant and we met the owners of it.
Heather and Joe. I loved them. I felt like instantly like I've known them.
Yeah, they
my
were
entire
total
life.
Family. Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's see what else. Then what was the other city I said? Oh, Chicago.
Chicago.
Duh.
Publican.
Publican. Amazing meal and even better service. Like that waiter, we worked him to the bones between all of our food intolerances at that
he
table.
He was awesome. His name is David. You can ask for him. And he rode a canoe and he went down the stairs for our entertainment. And that makes no sense to anybody who's never eaten a Publican, but go eat a Publican and then you'll be like, what? He rode the canoe? That's awesome. Now people are like, really? Is there a canoe in the restaurant? And then he was so knowledgeable and so helpful and so like on everything. And definitely, I think, the best service I've ever had in any restaurant ever.
Yeah. It was amazing.
Plus the pork rinds were so good.
Yeah. You guys ordered 3 servings of pork rinds.
Did you say you guys, but I'm pretty sure you participated.
I ate some, but I wasn't as enthusiastic. It was good. I guess I have pork rinds locally, so I wasn't
you
like...
You have red apron, right?
Yeah, so it's not like as unique for me. Yeah.
And the tongue.
Oh my gosh, the tongue in the fig reduction. I texted Matt a photo and I was like, you have to make this. And he's like, I don't know what that tastes like. And I'm like, we will spend the next 3 months perfecting this recipe. It was so amazing. Yeah. Also really amazing, Jenny's ice cream at the Mothership in Columbus, Ohio. Unfortunate that you missed that, but you also can't have grass-fed dairy, so it doesn't matter. But they make their own like honey-based salted caramel sauce that they poured over my sweet potato with roasted marshmallow ice cream. And I'm kind of reliving that moment in my memory on like a regular basis. Just saying.
I'm glad that I missed out because I would have missed out anyways. And I believe I would have maybe had a little temper tantrum and maybe a big temper tantrum. So it's probably good I didn't see that and I can just pretend it never happened.
Move right along. Cool. So that's kind of what I can remember to say. I am working on a blog post that should be up by the time this podcast goes live. So
I did my roundup blog post on, we can put a link in the show notes, on Monday. I got home a whole day earlier than you.
Yeah, I was like, how did you get that up? I'm combing through the internet and putting up like new photo collages and everything. So it's kind of taking me a while, but I want to be able to look back on it for myself because it's kind of like a once in a lifetime opportunity for me. So, and I did 2 weeks straight. So there's twice as much to recap as well, but, I'm hoping to get it up tomorrow, but it might go up Saturday. But, anyway, so we want to thank everyone who came out and supported us. And we also want to thank you if you weren't able to come out because we didn't come to you or because you have a different event. And if you've supported us in some other way, one of the things that Sarah and I did hear consistently from people is that they were happy to support us and they were so grateful for the work that we do. And hearing that goes so long. It really is so important to this mission that we're on and helps us remember why we do it and why it's worth, you know, the lack of sleep and the extra stress and kind of all that stuff, because hearing that from so many people and witnessing how we've touched your lives is something, like I said, that's for me an opportunity of a lifetime, and I don't ever want to forget it. So I sincerely cannot thank everyone enough who has supported us in some way or another, and especially if you came out to these signings, because it means the world to me that everybody showed up and gave us hugs and took selfies and giggled with us. Those are going to be my favorite moments for a long time.
Totally. I second that. So I think next week we'll have an actual show.
Yeah, we could probably pull that together.
We'll be ambitious. And I think that's it.
Cool.
I think that's it. I think we're done.
Have a great week, everybody. And if you haven't yet, please go review our books on Amazon and review the show on iTunes. It helps other people make good choices.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Oh, sorry. I was going to mute and then I didn't mute fast enough.